everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today is the author of In the Dark, New Ways to Avoid the Harmful Effects of Living in a Technologically Connected World, Jason Borden-Smith. How are you today, Jason?
I'm fantastic, Miro. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
It's absolutely my pleasure to have you joining us today on the podcast. And for those listening, Jason is an entrepreneur, author, and speaker. He has founded four companies during his business career, including one of the largest and most successful contaminated land consultancy companies in Australia. He also has over 25 years diversified environmental health experience, hosts two applied science degrees, and has published 11 peer-reviewed papers, including three in the prestigious Medical Journal of Australia. And he is joining us today to talk about his book, In the Dark. But before we get into the meaty part of discussing the book and the themes behind it, Jason, my first question for you is, what inspired you to become an author?
Interesting question. What really happened, I wrote my first book called Making Waves, because people would come up to me who either knew me or knew about me and say, how did you create such a successful company from starting off in your lounge room with no business experience, no money, and a couple of science degrees? And I kind of got sick of talking about it, so I decided to put it in paper, and that's what started my career as an author. Not that I classify myself as an author in the traditional sense of the word, but that was my first book. The second book, which we want to talk about today, that really came about as a promise to me. It sounds different, but my mother, Judith, who passed over a few years ago, she suffered from chemical sensitivity and electrosensitivity from an early age. And I was determined to find the cause and obviously the cure of her ailment. Now, I failed in that mission, and all we could do, because she was allergic to the city, was move her to the country area where she had a better quality of life. But her condition deteriorated over time, and eventually she passed away with inflammation in the brain. So a couple of years ago, I came down with what we call metabolic syndrome. It's a series of diseases that are not kind of fatal, but they just slowly make you ill. Things from high blood pressure, kind of nearly diabetes, pre-diabetic insulin levels, other issues like sleep apnea, and a general array of metabolic syndrome that just drain energy. So I tried everything, and I got very big, like I think I topped out at 145 kilos, and I tried everything, every diet, I tried all the exercises, and nothing seemed to work. And in 2015, Christmas time, I was at the beach, kind of meditating state, or very relaxed, and I got this inspiration to look into the link between biology and physics. And I went, what? Biology and physics? Now, most people know the word biochemistry, but very few know the word biophysics. So that sent me down a journey, and that journey, the result of that journey was In the Dark, because now I feel we have discovered the root cause. I didn't discover, of course. I've just read about it and researched it and put the pieces of the puzzle together. For those in the audience who don't know me, my background was like a disease detective. When I left university, I worked for the health department and traced down chemicals and pathogens to find out what was causing the outbreak of Lyme's disease or typhoid fever, and looking into childhood lead poisoning and a whole range of different chemical exposures as well. So it's been in my blood for a long time, and I think we have discovered maybe the most self-empowering knowledge in the area of health that's ever been discovered, and we're going to talk a little bit about that now.
I see. And as we're on the topic, I'd like to shift our conversation over to the book itself. And we often talk about the marvel of technology and all the positive impact it's had on us, all the quality of life improvements that we've had just in the last decade, for example. But what is the downside of all this technology? And in that sense, what is the methodology behind the book?
Yeah, great question. I see technology a little bit like a knife or a file. It's a tool. It's a tool we can use to heal, or it's a tool we can use to harm. And we need to understand both sides of the equation so we can apply it appropriately through society. And what I discovered was we didn't have a very good grasp on the negative side of technology. And if you go all the way back, because what we're talking about within the dark is electromagnetic fields. These are either naturally occurring EMFs, like the sun, like the earth, or the Schumann resonance of the earth, ourselves, plants, nature. Nature vibrates, sends out these frequencies that are healthy to humans, and in which we've evolved over literally billions of years in together with that. So all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, about 100 years ago, in the late 1800s, we discovered electricity. We decided to go with alternate current instead of direct current. All the natural energy is direct current. All the man-made artificial, or what I call non-native EMFs, these are frequencies in which our body has never experienced before, and we're struggling to cope with them. So the way I went about writing the book was I really needed to get a handle on two subjects. One was what I call quantum electrodynamics or quantum biology, light physics. So I joined a group run by Dr. Jack Cruz, who's a practicing neurosurgeon and one of the leading educators in quantum biology. So I really had to understand deeply about mitochondria. And most people don't understand that mitochondria is a separate DNA. We have two forms of DNA in our body. One is our nuclear genome that we all learn at school, and the second one is mitochondria, which is the energy-generating part of the DNA. And what Dr. Cruz and the main researcher in mitochondria, Dr. Doug Wallace, have discovered is that up to 80 or even 90% of all modern diseases are related to damage to the mitochondrial genome before it tells the DNA, the hardware, what's going on. So we've been kind of focusing on the wrong DNA for since I think Nixon declared war on cancer in the 1970s, and we spent maybe up to $1.5 trillion on working at the nuclear genome. Meanwhile, all these modern diseases are just increasing exponentially. Every second person has got heart disease or cancer, or all the kids are getting autism, or we've got all these other neurological, autoimmune, and a whole host of modern diseases that never existed before we invented electricity, or very rarely manifested. The second part of the research was the conflict in the scientific literature where you had this debate between thermal and non-thermal radiation. So a lot of the existing physicists and researchers were convinced that the energy levels of the non-thermal, so these are the ones that don't cause the heat strong enough, like an X-ray does, to break the DNA gene. What we're learning is a whole host of other researchers saying, hey, it's not a DNA issue, it's a mitochondrial issue, it's a cellular membrane issue with the voltage-gated calcium channels that Dr. Paul has come out. And they say, no, the effects are real at these lower levels. And this debate has raged for decades, with industry and government saying, no, those levels can't cause damage, therefore it's not an issue. Thereby, you don't have to worry about using your mobile phone or your router, your Wi-Fi router, or all the Internet of Things that are burgeoning through society. I was very confused by all this because you've got opposite opinions. So I actually printed out so many studies off PubMed. I read all the methodology. As you alluded to in the intro, I am a double degree scientist. I have published in peer-reviewed medical journals, so I know a little bit about designing and carrying out scientific studies, and my personal conclusion, and the debate's still out there, is that all the studies, about 70% of the studies that were funded by industry tend to found there wasn't an issue, and the others that were funded independently by universities found there was. So there's right. a skew, and Henry Lay found this skew between the two. So just to finish up on that, because we could spend a whole day talking about this debate, it really was the work by Dr. Robert O'Becker and his colleague Andrew Marino. They've both got books out. I encourage everyone to read that if they want to get down to the nitty-gritty of what really going on. And that's how I did the methodology behind coming to my conclusions in the book.
I see. And you're raising a very good point there when it does come to research and biases and, of course, agendas, when it does come to actually conducting said research. But what really struck to me is that the part of the answer you gave me when it came to the kind of diseases and negative impacts that actually happen to us, whether it is, disease or cancer, etc., these are very sort of serious issues that we've battled in recent years with, absolutely. But what do you think is sort of the negative well-being effect of technology on our body, and how we can get it under control when it comes to the more sort of everyday life that we go along with?
Yeah, one of the harder things about understanding the effect of these artificial electromagnetic fields on the human body is that everyone's different. So just because you smoked all your life doesn't mean you're going to die of lung cancer. So you need to understand that it's very difficult to pinpoint particular symptoms on individuals. But in general, the earlier symptoms are headaches, sleeping difficulties, things like tinnitus, the ringing in the ears, which is becoming very common. Some people get heart arrhythmia and palpitations. Most people get tired. Some symptoms lead to depression and anxiety, difficulty concentrating, like brain fog is a big issue these days. Good studies showing infertility in both men and women, but mainly in men, the main studies. Skin rashes, I think that's going to become more common when we start using the fifth generation technology that we're rolling out now. Things like vertigo, nausea, it goes on, but they're the main ones right. that most people can know. The thing I want to talk about with the symptoms is there is a small population like my mother, and about 3%, they say, of the general population that suffers from electrosensitivity or electrohypersensitivity. This is where people can't be around these fields. They actually have severe symptoms and they have to avoid them. And a medical doctor in your neck of the woods, Dr. Erica Mallory Blythe, she is one of the leading experts in the world and definitely probably the number one in the UK if people want to look her up for her lectures and her papers on electrohypersensitivity. So that's a contact. Now, how do we get it under control? This is the good part. Like, I'm not a fear-mongering person who's saying you can't use your mobile phone, you can't use your Wi-Fi, we have to run away from technology. I had a very successful technology company. I'm a big fan of technology, so I don't want to come across as this kind of left-wing kind of hippie saying we've got to run back to nature and that's what we can do with living in a cave.
Right.
I'm a successful businessman and I love living in modern society, but I also don't like being poisoned. And we now know, I think we're very close to knowing what the main mechanisms are, and we're also getting very clever with our technology. A lot of people are getting scared with the modern technology, but I think the sophistication level of our technology is such that we could use it much more wisely. The way we get it under control from a society perspective is we really need the engineers, the RF engineers, the engineers who develop all the Internet of Things, all the technology, to sit down with the biologists, with the quantum biologists, and have a conversation. Because, I think we have 60 or 70 engineers in our company. And they're a little bit different to scientists. I love them because they really get things done. You give them a scope and they're off and they're going to deliver. Great for building bridges and cities and all these things. But they don't focus on health. They've never been taught health. It's not their job. but they need to understand there are negative impacts of this technology. And I think if we got in a room together, they could work out ways to minimise society's exposure at a bigger level. Now, what do you do in your home, in your office? Because I know a lot of people are saying, well, what do I do in my home? We're not going to have time to cover all that now. They can buy the book, of course, and they can go to other websites that have lots of information. But the main thing we need to do is minimise our indoor exposure and maximise our outdoor exposure. I never went into the light physics and how important things like getting morning AM sun, setting your circadian biology, chronobiology or circadian rhythms is going to become one of the number one areas of medicine. And if we get that right, if you get your light exposures correct, you're going to sleep a lot better, you're going to recover when you sleep, so all your regeneration is going to happen much better, and you're going to minimise much of this damage. So new research is coming out about UV, you know, who's classified UV radiation as a class one carcinogen. I disagree with that finding. I think all that research was done not with natural sunlight, but with the UV spectrum and tanning beds and under lights and not the full natural spectrum that we get. Now, sure, we don't want to get the sun, especially in my country, which is known as the sunburn country, Australia, because you're going to get burnt, and that's silly getting burnt. But understanding light physics is really important, particularly at night. We spend too much time on our screens, whether it's a TV screen, an iPhone, or our computers, because we need to block the really strong blue light that comes off these screens. The American Medical Association is coming out with papers now. You've seen a lot of the technology starting to put in, like, I think it's called nightshade on the iPhone, where you can turn down the actual blue light concentration coming off your phone. You can wear blue blocking glasses like I do at night, so I block all the blue light if I'm watching a screen. You can use different light bulbs that give off a more red tinge at night to help your circadian rhythms, and a whole host of other things you can do with light physics. When it comes to technology, the number one thing is to be wired. If you have an Ethernet connection rather than a wireless connection, you're going to greatly minimise your exposure, in fact, bring it down to negligible levels. And it can be done, and your internet connections are faster. So we really need to start looking, particularly for schools, like all the private and Catholic schools here in Australia are all going to Wi-Fi with laptops, and I'm really concerned about that. So there's things we need to do in that area. You've got to be careful with baby monitors because they're all Wi-Fi. So sticking a cell tower next to your child's bed, not a good idea. You don't need a baby monitor that's wireless. You can get wired ones, or you can just, you know, listen to your baby cry from your bedroom. Most people can hear them. There's a whole range of other things relating to your, what they call DECT phones, your DEC phones, the ones you run around. I like corded phones. They're much better than the Bluetooth and wireless DEC phones. I don't know if you want me to keep going through the house here, Miro, or... No. Move on to business orientated questions for our audience.
Yes, well, I think you've given us some great food for thought there. And just to kind of add on to that, I think that when it comes to sunlight, you know, if you're going to get a tan, you might as well get it in a natural way and not stick yourself in sunbed and then look kind of silly when you get out of there. And of course, I'm a personal fan of wired connections as well. I'm a bit old school like that. But as you say, let's refocus ourselves when it comes to businesses. And you've given us a good amount of examples, but how can businesses specifically today address the issue of the negative technology effect, especially in industries like tech and, well, most work environments based in an office, really?
Yeah, I actually think that businesses need to lead. Governments have always been followers. They've never really been leaders. And the public are becoming more and more aware, and eventually they'll start demanding things be done as the link between these artificial electromagnetic fields and their child's health issues start to manifest and they start to link the two. But businesses are in a very good position, one, to capitalize, that there is a money-making opportunity for businesses. I was speaking to, I won't mention the school, but I said to the principal that one day soon a school will advertise that their classrooms are all wired and they're kind of exposed to RF and electric and magnetic fields are lowest in the community and your child is safer to come here, will be smarter because some studies showing that these exposures lower your IQ level in school performance, and it'll be a marketing angle. So I see getting in front of this early as an opportunity for business. I put in my book three or four different opportunities I saw. There are a lot more. For the electricians and all the electrical contractors, I would love to see us go to direct current rather than alternate current. So houses can be retrofitted or built using the much more friendly direct currents that at least can run most of your housing electricity needs, maybe for that higher power usage, washing machines and fridges, you may need to run some AC cables. But you can splice that off, and there will be more and more people demanding this service. There's the whole area of light that we started talking about. There's some really good technology coming out of, I think it's MIT, and they're taking incandescent bulbs, the light spectrum. So the incandescent bulbs, light spectrum, are the closest that match sunlight. And we replace them out with compact fluorescent bulbs, which are terrible. They are just the worst bulbs you could ever use for health. They may be good for energy, but they are terrible for health. And I recommend everyone replace them in their house if they can. Now, some countries you can't buy incandescent bulbs anymore, but you can if you go to the pet stores. So you're allowed to use them for your animals, but you're not allowed to use them for humans. But you can still get them. And the new LED technology that's coming out with lights can mimic the natural sunlight. And they can actually set it up so you get the morning sun colours in the morning. And then as you're going through into the kind of brighter midday colours where you're getting all the UVB and high levels of UVA during the day, and then it kind of tapers off like the sunset, getting into the kind of infrared levels, just like the natural day. So if we had lights that in our houses, if it was too dark to open the windows, if you can, open your windows, open your blinds, use natural light. But if you're in an office, I think these lights have a huge opportunity. And there's a movement now called the Wellness Institute, which is all about creating buildings that are healthy. So there's a new movement in business in that I see that has great potential. There's also new technology coming out in the area of photomodulation, which is a fancy word for putting light frequencies into your body that's missing because you're not getting the sunlight. There's one called the Quantlet where they put light into the radial artery next to your wrist, and that's showing, only just released the last few months. It's looking like a promising technology where we can mimic sunlight for those countries, particularly up where you live, especially getting up towards the Arctic and Norway, where there is no sunlight for large parts of the year, that they can use this quantum technology. I think that's going to come along. When it comes to computers and the Internet of Things, this is the big one. This is the elephant in the room. If we're going to send harmful signals, and we know these signals are causing harm to our biology, we know that. They don't admit it, but we know it, and eventually they do know it. You know why they know it? It's because if you look in the warnings in all your gadgets, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's the carrier that's sending the signals, they all give out warnings to people to minimise their exposure. Lloyd's of London and other reinsurers are now concerned about insuring companies for these exposures. It's not a blanket policy, it's a case-by-case scenario, but it's starting to happen. So they're aware of it. So if we know these signals are potentially harmful to human health, there are signals that we can put on these carrier waves that won't do as much damage. So the companies who start researching this and developing this technology are going to be the ones that are most successful, because we're going to get to a stage where we're going now that a city environment, because you know, people talk about a trillion sensors going across the world over the next 10 to 15, 20 years. That's to do with the autonomous vehicles that need to have these sensors using these radio frequencies and microwaves to have a car to brake quickly. And we're putting all these Internet of Things through all our homes. The average gadget with wireless connections in a house is around 7 today. In about 5 to 8 years, it'll be 30. Every appliance that you buy will have antennas that can communicate both ways through a smart meter that's being rolled out globally. Again, another device that needs to be looked at, because it is a source of serious health risks for many sensitive people. So we need to work out the best way to send these signals that minimise biology. I don't know anyone who's working on that. And if I was a smart RF engineer at a university, I'd go speak to our quantum biology mates, and I'd be working on that as a solution. Because who comes up with that will be a multi-billionaire.
And my last question I would like to ask you today, Jason, is the one I ask every guest here on the podcast, and that is, what are you currently reading?
I actually don't read many books. I know that's a surprise to most people. I have trouble focusing on a page with words. I have mild dyslexia and my mind wanders and I generally fall asleep. So I listen to podcasts like yours, Mira. That's really what I do with audio books. What I'm most interested in at the moment is governance and leadership. And the podcast I spend most of my time listening to is from the Solara Report. It's run by a wonderful woman called Catherine Austin Fitz. Amazing, amazing podcast that go into deep details around so many issues. It's a business-focused podcast, so that's really where I focus my kind of spare time in trying to learning all about leadership and governance from the highest level. Because when I speak to high executives and really high-level politicians that I've met, they can't tell you who runs the world. And I want to know who runs the world. Because I think we're facing a very big challenge as a society. We're going towards an inhumane society. We're seeing too much effort going towards technology, into turning us into kind of a half machine, half human. The technocrats have really got control. And I'm all about humanity. I think humans are amazing beings with a very special purpose on this planet and maybe in the universe. So I'm quite interested in digging deep into governance and leadership.
Great, that's fantastic, and quite a message to end up on for the podcast. And with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Jason.
Thank you.
And of course, for our listeners, if you would like to know more about what we talked about today with Jason, and of course In the Dark, all relevant descriptions will be in the description below, where you can find links to where you can purchase not only In the Dark but Jason's other work, and you can find out more about him as well. I would like to thank you once again for joining us this week on Lit Radio, and we very much look forward to seeing you on the next episode.